You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Michael Glab. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, November 21st, 2017.
The city may have an obligation to shift the burden of the parking costs to the users of parking rather than to everyone in the community.
The City of Bloomington's Parking Commission completed its first annual parking review last week. Chair of the Parking Commission, Jim Blickensdorf, says that while the 400-page document doesn't present any findings, it's a valuable research document that will shape the face of downtown in the next couple of years. That interview coming up on today's feature report.
Are you having mom and dad over for the holidays? Our weekly segment, Everyday People, has tips for making the holidays merry and bright for the elderly and the disabled. That's coming up later in the program, but first, your daily headlines.
An Indianapolis city councilman is being asked to resign from his post by fellow Republicans. Councilmember Jeff Miller, representing the Capitol's South Side, turned himself into Indianapolis police on Friday after he was charged with three counts of child molestation. Marion County Republican Central Committee Chair Jim Merritt says he expects Miller to resign from his post on Monday. However, Miller has yet to step down from his position. Miller is accused by two girls, both under 14 years of age, of inappropriate contact and touching them with electronic foot massagers.
Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill says he will restrict the use of cannabidiol oil to those in the state suffering from seizures who sign a registry. Cannabidiol oil, or CBD, is a compound found in marijuana. Hill's remarks this afternoon clarify reports from state entities regarding the legality of the oil in April. At that time, Hill announced the move towards the legalization of use of the oil by those who apply to a state registry and can prove their disability. It's currently illegal to obtain CBD oil in the state, and Indiana excise police officers have confiscated and criminally charged sellers. Hill says it will be up to police departments and prosecutors to determine whether to confiscate or arrest those using the oil. Hill has written several opinion pieces decrying the legalization of marijuana, including one earlier this month.
The proposed plan to develop a waste transfer station on Bloomington's northwest side is stirring up controversy. County Council member Shelley Yoder originally sponsored the proposed transfer station's Department of Environmental Management permit. Yoder has since stepped down from that role and is succeeded by Bloomington engineer and architect Jeff Fanyo. The proposed solid waste transfer station, which would accept garbage from the county and sort it, is a project of Indiana Green Transfer and Recycling. The project drew scrutiny toward Yoder's position in Indiana Green Transfer and Recycling and is facing opposition from area residents. At the County Council's meeting on Wednesday, former IU Kelley School of Business professor and Angelina Road resident Dwight Worker says nearby businesses on the site were blindsided by the proposal.
I immediately that day began canvassing the neighborhood. I am batting 100% every place I go to signed. I walked into Print Pack, and this is not NIMBY in their backyard. This is 50 feet away in the front yard. They had no idea. Their jaws dropped. They said their attorneys are coming in. I went to Troyer Foods. They had no idea. Print Pack, $50 million. 220 high-paid manufacturing jobs. And this is not how we treat companies coming in here. Troyer is worried about contamination. Printpack makes sterile food packaging. You attract a company here, and then you propose to put a garbage dumping site right in front of them. They feel that they have major basis for legal action if this goes through. Any contamination on there. Frito-Lay has made it very clear that they will move if this goes in. So there is a serious legal liability, and I understand business law, that you are taking a risk on right now.
After his time at the Monroe County Council's time was up, Worker threatened to block the entrance of any waste facility on Angelina Road near Vernal Pike with his and area farmers' tractors.
There will be nonviolent civil disobedience, including us blocking it with our tractors as farmers. That'll be a nice video for you arresting 70 and 80-year-old farmers who are trying to keep the neighborhood clean. We will not back off from this.
The proposed waste transfer station also raised concern among Ellettsville residents during their town council meeting on November 13th. Valerie DeWar was among a group of concerned Ellettsville residents who brought their concerns to the town council meeting.
Highlighted on your flyer is a notice that at least 200 tons of trash would be taken to Terre Haute daily using Highway 46 through our town. We estimate that that's about 10 trucks two times a day coming both ways through town. Secondly, and perhaps even more of a concern long term, is the fact that the runoff water is in the Jack's Defeat Creek watershed.
DeWar is concerned about what she termed undetermined elements in the runoff from the transfer site. Council members Bryce Teeter, Scott Oldham, and Scott Thomas did not comment on the proposed transfer station or DeWar's concerns. Council members Kevin Ferris and Scott Mobley were absent.
Road work and lane restrictions will be in place along State Road 37 during the Thanksgiving holiday. The Indiana Department of Transportation is reminding travelers they can use alternate routes to avoid delays and heavy traffic on State Road 37 to Indianapolis. In a recent press release, NDOT suggests using State Road 46 as an alternate. Drivers can travel State Road 46 East to I-65 North or take State Road 46 West to State Road 67 North. Construction crews will be off on Thanksgiving Day, but lane restrictions on the road will remain during the holiday. Road work will resume on Friday. Drivers who do use State Road 37 between Bloomington and Martinsville are asked to eliminate all distractions when driving and be aware of changing traffic conditions in construction zones. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Michael Glab. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar air hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support for WFHB also comes from the Uptown Cafe, established in 1976. Located at 102 East Kirkwood Avenue, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner, as well as wine, beer, spirits, and cocktails. More information is available online at the-uptowncafe.com.
Jim Blickensdorf is a downtown Bloomington business owner who admits he was at first skeptical of the metered parking. Blickensdorf recently chaired the first Bloomington Parking Commission, and, as he tells WFHB News Director Wes Martin, his views have definitely changed. Blickensdorf talks about the commission's first annual report, its findings, and where we go from here on today's WFHB feature report.
Learn from reading through the report, there are lots of opportunities to improve the efficiency of the system and to perhaps streamline the city's parking system. As we note that they're almost almost every department, every major department of the city, in some way touches or affects parking. And we know that parking touches and affects the lives of every visitor and resident in the city of Bloomington. So we set out to have a full understanding of how the system is organized, how that compares with literature and best practices in other comparative communities, and to really see what the current financial status is, so that when changes are proposed, a financial model could be built to see what the impact is. So, for instance, if a neighborhood wants to organize and have a neighborhood zone created to alleviate parking concerns in their neighborhood, there are costs associated with that. There's the cost of signing the neighborhood, the permits themselves, the cost of enforcement, which is probably the greatest single cost in a neighborhood zone program. And those costs need to be recognized and reconciled against the need for a parking control system. In my view, the city has a fiduciary responsibility to at least break even. And I think also the literature would state that the city may have an obligation to shift the burden of the parking costs to the users of parking rather than to everyone in the community. Prior to the installation of parking meters, the system was, in a sense, losing money. And that's what we refer to as a subsidy. When money from the general fund is being used to support parking activities by the few, well, that money comes from all of us. And prior to the installation of meters, the system was operating at a deficit of $2.5 million. $2.5 million on approximately a $68 million budget. So that's a significant amount. And the way that the commission probably looks at it now is that that creates a subsidy from those who drive and park, cross-subsidy from those people who drive and park to those people who don't. If you decide to take the bus, or if you decide to bike to work, or if you're one of those people who just never come down for any reason, but you live in the city limits, in some way you are paying property taxes to support the other user's ability to park in a garage or park on the street for when it was 2 hours free. And to me, that doesn't seem exactly fair, because you should probably be paying for parking the same way you would pay for water or electricity, in proportion to how you use it. And if I have a 24/7 reserve space in the garage, I should have the expectation that for that privilege, I should be paying quite a large number, whatever the market will support. I should not have the expectation that everyone else in the city of Bloomington should be helping to pay for my private parking space.
So what happens next with the reports?
Well, the great thing about this process is that it has been an ongoing dialogue. I started working on this in March. The commission has had lots of opportunity to review the data over the last 6 months. There's been an ongoing dialogue with members of the administration, including the deputy mayor and the mayor, as well as a number of department heads. And we've had the opportunity to meet one-on-one with many of the council members and continue to do that, to educate people about the system and about what appropriate progressive parking policy looks like. Now, the commission will report its findings to council on January 17th. Between now and March, the city will be working with Desmond Inc. to do a parking study. They've contracted with them to do a more comprehensive look at parking needs and maybe even our future long-term needs. And I think that will also involve validating some of the commission's work. The next step for the commission is to gather public input on the report, encourage people to read the sections that they find interesting to themselves that maybe affect them. Certainly merchants downtown are affected by the garages and lots program, as well as meter parking. If you live in a neighborhood zone, that's going to be important to you. If you're a consumer coming downtown and you're interested in either why you can't find a space or why you have to pay for a space, then the metered parking section is certainly important. And we encourage all stakeholders to come to the December-January meetings so we can have a public dialogue. The report was written with data in mind, and the data does not tell us what the everyday experience is with users of the parking system, either merchants who may find it acceptable or not acceptable, or consumers who maybe experience frustration looking for parking. So getting input from the public about their perspectives, I think, is really important, because there will certainly be recommendations that follow, and that's a public process that involves, you know, lots of public input, and not just considering the financial aspects of parking management, but also the human side of things. We want this, we want to create a system that is managed well, but that's also acceptable and accessible for users of the downtown area specifically.
Jim, I was just wondering, as a downtown business owner, was there anything that really surprised you in this report?
Well, like most downtown business owners, I think in 2013, when the meters were being considered, I was a little skeptical at first. I was concerned about how they might affect business. Now, 5 years on, we have a wholly different downtown with new developments seemingly happening every month, with new restaurants popping up, with new shops opening. So we have a vibrant downtown. To me personally, it does not seem as though the meters have hurt business or hindered people coming to downtown. As I look at the report as a merchant, I see opportunities to improve the efficiency of the system. And what concerns me is how the system is being used. The literature suggests that garages and lots should be allocated for long-term usage, long-term commuters to the downtown. And what we're seeing is a lot of short-term transactions, just a little bit over an hour. Really, the average use of the garage is about 71 minutes, where the average use in the street is only about 61 minutes, so 10 minutes more. And that's inconsistent with what the literature suggests. The other thing that concerns me is the employee parking situation. As a business owner, I get there pretty early, and I can park right in front of my store. Of course, my employees come before the customer, so they could park right next to me. If this happens over and over downtown, and business owners and employees are parking on the street, then where do the customers park? Where do our guests go? And to me, one of the questions that the commission needs to solve is the employee parking situation. Another issue that's been raised, which is a concern, is the social equity component. There are a number of nonprofits and certainly churches downtown that have expressed concerns over parking and parking availability on Sundays when there are no parking controls. And places like Wonder Lab that serve populations that need accessible parking, that don't necessarily have the funds or the ability to pay for parking, and Wonder Lab sees that as a barrier to serving that population. And so the parking system is, in my mind, just a bit regressive, and I think there's ways for us to adjust that, again, by shifting some of the burden to user fees rather than spreading it across the entire population. That would be my take. Parking controls will have to change and adapt. For much of the system, it hasn't been touched in 7 years. Metered parking hasn't been touched in 5 years. And so I think we're likely to see a lot of change coming forward in the next year, maybe even the next 2 years, because of city budgets being approved in October, so the 18 budget's already essentially done. And it's just, I can't stress enough how important it is to have members of the public who care about this issue to attend the meetings and be involved.
Jim Blinkensdorf, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
That was Parking Commission Chair Jim Blinkensdorf speaking with WFHB News Director Wes Martin.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly community resources segment, Everyday People.
Don't mess around.
Welcome to Everyday People, improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County.
Everyday resources for everyday people, connecting our community by sharing resources you need, want, and probably don't know about.
Hi there, Courtney.
Well, hi, Stacy.
How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm wonderful. We're going to talk about a topic that not everyone wants to talk about, which
oh,
is
good.
The holidays. I know.
I love talking about stuff nobody wants to.
Well, I love talking about holidays, so.
I believe that, yes.
I know. I love it. I'm so excited. So I found this great article on agingcare.com, which is a wonderful resource for seniors and everything related to seniors. Mm-hmm. And there's an article about how to reduce loneliness. And I shared that with you. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a really good website. And I think it ties in with a caregiver university class we have coming up in December on managing holiday stress. I think for seniors, it's certainly a very applicable topic. And even for people, you know, caregivers or anyone, the holidays can often feel like a time that we're forced to be very happy. And they can, and that's true for a lot of people.
Right.
But it can also, especially for older people, be a time when they're reflecting back on things from the past, family members who may no longer be around. So the article has some, I'm going to skim through quickly.
Perfect.
Some of the tips to address loneliness and to enhance your loved one's holiday. First and foremost, listen and understand if they want to talk. So if they've got something on their minds, be there for them. Secondly, remind them how important they are and how much of a part of the family they are. And, you know, they're oftentimes the centerpiece of a holiday in terms of their role in the family. And holiday cards. As we get older, we often stop receiving as many. A good thing to do would be to help your loved one write cards and send them out, or to encourage your friends and family to send cards to your loved one.
I love
that. It's a little
thing
you could do. Brings a little joy and, you know, something they can look at and refer to when they're having a bad day. You can help them see that you're trying to simplify the holidays.
Which we should do anyway.
I'm all about that. Yeah, it doesn't have to be the grand thing that it may have been when all the kids were little. There are little things we can do to celebrate the holidays that are just as meaningful. If your parent is in a nursing home or an assisted living facility, you might want to see if there's a local school classroom, kindergarten, that would come and visit the nursing home. And I know that does happen already. But in your community, if you're here in Monroe or Owen, that might be a nice thing to think about coordinating. And again, if your elders or your family's in a facility, you can help the facility find programs that feature children. So you can take the elders out to school programs and choirs and things like that connect
that.
It in that way, if that's a possibility. The other thing is you can decorate their home or room in stages. So if they're in a facility, you can certainly decorate their side of the room or their own room if they have that. And that's a nice way to get out the old decorations that they love, put those up, have them out, bring that familiarity back. You can also bring their favorite baked goods or treats if they're in a facility, even if they're not and they're not able to bake like they once did. Help them make that recipe, you know, and invite people over.
I think combining those last two, I love having a tree decorating party and like have hot chocolate and have that kind of stuff.
Love that, where you kind of roll it all into one.
And everybody's invited, grandkids, kids.
Yeah.
We actually do that.
That's
and
a good way to get the whole family together.
It is, and it helps with getting their tree up, so you're being useful. But yeah, I love those combined.
Yeah, that's a really great idea. It's those little touches,
right?
Like most of the time. It's not the grand gestures. It's the little things.
It really is. And something, too, that I kind of tend to forget, but because I love doing the holiday get-together and decorate and do all that as a family, but also to take it down because now the holidays are over and it's almost a little more daunting.
Right.
Because they are over. All the family coming over is done. And but if you have a putting up everything little celebration, you can have a taking down everything.
And please do this before like March, because that really.
Oh, you're such a fun sucker, Courtney.
I know. Thanks for having this discussion, Stacy.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on Everyday People.
Tune in next week for more information and resources that connect everyday people to everyday resources. For WFHB, I'm Courtney Stewart.
And I'm Stacy Goffinet.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, along with me for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Everyday People is produced by Courtney Stewart and Stacey Goffinet. Our engineer is Megan Wade. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Michael Glab.
And I'm Sarah Vaughn. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as other WFHB news programs, online at WFHB.org.
You can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news at WFHB.org.
And if you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Now stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.